Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, April 7th, 2012. This is episode 863. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by BigCommerce. From web design to accounting to marketing, BigCommerce provides everything you need to run a successful online business. For a limited time, get a 30-day free trial to build a fully functional store. Go to BigCommerce.com, click on the radio icon, and use my offer code, Leo. And by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, helping you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about, gosh, I can't remember, gardening? Roofing? Oh, yeah, pest control. No, it's about tech. Anything with a chip in it, whether it's a computer or a cell phone, a home theater installation. Oh, what else is there? I think I've covered it. The internet. My phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Oh, coffee. That's right. I knew there was something else. Coffee. Thank you, chat room. 888-827-5536. That also translates to 8888-ASK-LEO. That might be a little bit easier to remember. 8888-ASK-LEO. And we take questions about anything, including coffee. Anything you want to talk about. If it's got a chip in it, it's better. I don't know of any digital. I guess there are digital brewing techniques. I'm more of a analog guy when it comes to that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Ask Leo. Sybil says in our chat room that I supplanted your favorite home improvement show. You know, I did for many years a home improvement show that's still on the air, the Carey Brothers. I've done everything on the radio, but you know, the tech is the thing I like the best. I've been answering computer calling questions on the radio since 1991. So this is my, wait a minute, is this my 21st year doing this? I'm an old man. And doing it on the TV since 1994. So, if you want to ask a question about DOS batch files, I'm here for you. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number to call. Well, just to finish up the saga I started last week of my iPhone that I treated with this service that's supposed to keep it waterproofed called Liquipel, and it didn't. Pell, any liquid. I dipped it in a glass of water, and it was a major short circuit. It took me, I took it to my friends at an iPhone repair company. They took it apart and replaced every component and said, you know, it's still not working. We think it must be you fried the logic board. And that would cost so much, you might as well just get a new phone. So I went to the Apple store, and you know, the Apple geniuses have a lot of leeway in what they can do in all this. I talked to the genius. I had a nice genius. It was up in the Santa Rosa Apple store. I love calling them geniuses. Genius Joel, that's what it said on his badge. Genius Joel was very generous. He said, you know, if it were completely destroyed, we probably couldn't do anything for you, but we'll take it, we'll sell off the parts, and we'll give you a new one, brand new one, for $200. I said, I'll take it. Deal. $200 lesson learned. And at that point, after all that, he said, by the way, was this because you dipped it in water I told him it got wet. He said, but yeah, I saw you do it on, was this the Liquipel phone? I said, yeah, it was. Thank you for not busting me. It turned out he was a fan. I said, you know, I don't like to, you know, say, do you know who I am right up front? I wait. And he said, thank you. So Apple does have, and I've heard from geniuses privately, that they have a lot of leeway if you bring them something. My daughter bought her a new phone, dropped it like a week later, didn't have Apple Care, smashed the glass, and they just swapped it. And they have, of course, she's a pretty young girl, right? So I don't think I would have gotten that treatment, but maybe. They have a lot of leeway for everything from giving you a new phone to saying, the heck with you, buddy boy. But they are ultimately responsible for how many phones they give away, how generous they are. The manager might talk to them if they do it too much. But they have a lot of leeway. So my advice to you, if you have a problem with an Apple product, is to go to the Apple store. You have to make an appointment with the Apple Genius. They're very popular. And be nice. Bring candy. Treat them with respect. And whatever you do, don't lie to them. I didn't say, I don't know what happened to this phone. I said it got wet. Right up front. And, you know, he takes a little flashlight and peers into the connector for the headphones and says, you sure did. Because there's a little strip in there that turns bright red when it gets wet. So I can't, I guess, in good conscience, recommend Liquipel. They said, well, you did it wrong, Leo. You shouldn't. And it's true. They say, first of all, they say, don't get it wet. And I thought, well, that's good. I'm glad I spent $60 to treat it so I couldn't get it wet. And they say, if you do get it wet, take out the battery. Can't do that. It's an iPhone. Don't shake it. Okay, I admit I shook it. And don't try to turn it on. I turned it on. I just wanted to see if it worked. So they're right. I didn't do the right thing. Now, I do notice they have changed the ad copy on the front page. It used to say waterproof. And there is a technical definition for waterproof. You know, it has to be able to go underwater for a certain depth without damage. And it definitely, that's not water. So they've changed waterproof, it looks like, everywhere to water safe. That's, I think, a good response to this. Don't dip it in water. If it splashes, maybe you'll be all right. It's water safe. That seems fair. So there's the upshot of the Liquipel story. I did spend $200. And this time, by the way, I bought they have Apple Care Plus, which no matter what you do to your phone, I think gives you a new phone for $100. I figured, well, I never know what'll happen. maybe I'll be tempted to dip it in water again. You never know. So happy ending. I spent a lot of money, but that was in service of you, the people, because, you know, I wanted you to know whether this stuff worked. And I'm glad that we got them to change their ad copy to say water safe. That's a little bit more accurate. It's not waterproof. Let's see. What else is big in the news? 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. If you've got a comment, a suggestion, something you'd like to talk about, just checking my Twitter feed to see if there's any big stories going on these days. Well, I almost think this is an April Fool's joke, except it's not. Google announced that they are making these Google glasses. They call them these Google goggles. It was in the New York Times. There's a picture. So the idea is, I don't know how I feel about this. Maybe you have an opinion. I'd love to hear it. That Google is going to make these glasses that are heads-up displays, so you continue to watch what you're doing as you walk around. But in your vision, and it's not clear if you look at the picture of the Google goggles, it's not clear if you're looking up to see it or if it's actually superimposing it on your vision. The picture in the New York Times and the video, Google distributed a video, makes it look like you are, you know, it's superimposed. It's what they call a heads-up display, that it superimposes on your vision things like where you are, what you're doing. You can make phone calls. You can listen to music. You can talk to your glasses. This is great. It'll show you your calendar. You look outside, it'll say it's 58 degrees with a 10% chance of rain. People can message you and you can reply by speaking. Nick Bilton wrote about this in the New York Times this week. Google says, yeah, they're real. They didn't say exactly when or how much. I guess the founder of Google, Sergey Brin, was seen wearing these at a party. They're kind of cool. But what do you think? I mean, really, augmented reality is what these are called. Now, it does say one day. Some reports, some rumors said by the end of the year for some anywhere from $250 to $500. I mean, I think no matter what they charge, there are people definitely will be wearing these around. My friend Robert Scoble, who was there and said, Sergey wouldn't let me wear the glasses, but I could tell they were flashing info to him. They look very lightweight. What do you think? You ready to wear Google glasses? 8888, ask Leah. We were talking. Welcome back. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, the Tech Guy Show. Website is techguylabs.com. You'll find a link there to the chat room. And I was talking with the chat room, about 1,000 strong in there. It's always fun. These are the smart kids in the back of the class who are making wiseacre comments. Linux Lurker says in the chat room about the Google Glasses, imagine going to a bar and trying to pick up an attractive young lady wearing those. No go.
Hi, I'm a nerd. Yeah.
Unless she's a nerd. Then she might think you're pretty cool. The Huffington Post has they call it a demented remix from Macintosh, a demented remix of the Google Goggles video in which the truth of it is shown. All you see is pop-up Google ads for everything you're looking at. You pick up a cup of coffee and it says Starbucks. You eat a sandwich and it says McDonald's. That's more likely. That seems more. I mean, who's going to pay for all this, right? But they do exist. They do exist. We saw Sergey Brin wearing one, this pair of them this week, and they apparently were telling him stuff. 8888 Ask Leo, that is the number if you want to talk about. Would you wear, I mean, I like the idea, but then I'm a super nerd. But I like the idea because, well, I'm also an old man. And so as you get older, one of the things happens is you see people and you go, I know you. I have no idea who you are. And what would be good, and this is, by the way, something that they apparently are not building into it, but could, is if it said, that's Joe. You went to high school with him. He's got two kids, Sally and Barbara. You know, right? His birthday is November 15th. That would be great. And he'd not know it, and you'd go, Joe! There'd be a short pause. I understand. Hey, Joe, how are Sally? How's Barbara? Happy birthday. That would be cool. They say they don't want to do that because they're afraid of the stalking potential. Who's that hot chick? Okay, where does she live? Where does she go to school? I mean, that would be, you're right, that's creepy. It seems like there'd be a way to get around that. I just love the idea of being able to look at stuff because as you get older, you will face this. Your memory starts to go, and what is that? Oh, the Eiffel Tower. That's great. I just like that idea. Just in time for my early onset Alzheimer's. I'm excited. Mark in Santa Ana, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, actually, if they integrated Google Plus with those Google Darknet glasses from the Damon reference,
it's like Damon, isn't it? Yeah, the science fiction novel.
I would actually use more my Google Plus account because then it would just simply tell me people about my Google Plus that I get close to that also have the glasses.
I think that's, frankly, I think that's the most likely scenario. You know how much Google's been pushing this social network. It hasn't really, you know, there's a lot of people on it, but only because you're automatically on it when you sign up for a Google account. And if Damon was a great sci-fi novel by a guy named Daniel Suarez, and the whole idea was you could, with these glasses, look around at the world and see people's reputation in a box above their head, like in a game. I loved that idea. I agree with you, Mark. That would be cool.
Yep. Actually, my wife has a second question about iPhone and pictures and moving.
No problem.
But, and this one's just a quick one. Is I'm the pseudo-webmaster for a troop in Tustin, and they want me to build an invitation thing for their 60th anniversary party, and I don't know how to do it. So I thought, well, can't we just use something like e-invite, or is it e-vite or
e-vite,
something like that?
Yeah.
But do you have a recommendation for which one is better than others? That's just, you know, I don't want to make people, you know, enter a bunch of stuff. We just need an easy way to count up how much food we should buy for this thing.
You know, I always use Evite, and the negative on Evite, and some people will find this a problem because we've all gotten much more alert about privacy, is that you have to kind of sign in and to use it, you have to sign into it and give them information. And so there is, you know, you're coercing your invitees. So I don't like that. There are other ones that are good. I think maybe Eventbrite is a little bit better.
Okay.
That allows you to charge for tickets and stuff, too. So I don't know if you want to raise money. But it's free to use.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never tried this, but the chat room is saying Anyvite is good. And I haven't used that one. A-N-Y-V-I-T-E. You can see it's a crowded category. Chat room, do you? I mean, there's also Facebook events. Now, in some ways, if you think and that everybody, now, is this for kids or their parents?
Both. I mean, this is because, you know, after 60 years of a troupe being around, you know, the kid, they're 18-year-olds who,
right.
who say, started in, you know, 1952, are now, you know, deep into their adulthood.
Right. I kind of lean towards Facebook because everybody in the world's on Facebook. They don't need to sign up for an additional thing.
Okay.
Facebook has an events thing. Now, one of the nice things about doing it as a Facebook event is it becomes a page. It becomes a locus. You could put pictures there. People can, after the fact, kind of continue to participate in it.
Okay.
The negative on every one of these is it kind of, you know, you have to join. Now, the nice thing about, I guess, doing Facebook is most people are on Facebook, but the people who aren't are going to really be PO'd.
Right. That's why I figured because I'm not on Facebook either. But I figured I got to figure out how to get the credentials because somebody a while back made the Facebook page for the troupe. But I'll figure that out.
You already have a Facebook page for the troupe, so that presumes that most people are doing it. You know, my friend Don Reisinger at CNET did a piece. Now, it's a few years old. The chat room's reminded me 3 years ago. 10 alternatives to Evite. Evite's the big name. We'll put a link in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs. Half of these probably are gone. Circle Up, Crusher, Include, Facebook, Invitastic. Okay, just because of the name, don't use Invitastic. My Punch.
Right.
I'm sorry. My Punch Bowl, Ping with 2 G's, Renku, Socializer, and Zoji. I bet you most of those are gone. His picks are Ping with 2 G's, Crusher, and My Punch Bowl. I think if you thought everybody were on Facebook, that Facebook would be kind of the best. Just because it's easy, and it gives you a page that's more than just an invitation page. And people will continue to participate. It almost makes this reunion an online reunion as well.
Right, yeah, for people who are far away. Okay.
Exactly.
Then the other question, real quick, also, Steve Gibson has an MFM controller. I have an old Pentium 100 with DOS 6.2.2 and Windows 3.1, and I probably live about 10 miles from him. If he wants it, shout it out on Security Now, and we'll figure out a way to hook up.
Good, Mark. That sounds great. And everybody, all the normal people listening to the show just kind of went, what?
An MFM controller with a DOS Pentium 100? What is he talking about?
That's good. No, Mark, I appreciate that. Shoot me an email, and I'll pass it along to Steve.
Okay.
Thank
you. About pictures on iPhones. My wife's trying to get pictures onto the iPhone without losing stuff. And is there a place that has really good instructions on how? Because, like, I'm trying to delete pictures from albums, and I can't seem to delete them. And I tried syncing, and I lost pictures. And
are you a Mac user, Mark, or a Windows user?
We have Mac, but she's on a PC. It's her work iPhone.
Because the easiest would be to use iPhoto for this. As you know, the iPhone will sync to iPhoto independently of iTunes. So you can set up an album on the iPhoto and drag everything that you want into that album and then sync it.
Oh, okay. Okay, so iPhoto's the
That's the easiest way. You know, Windows, you can use iTunes and I don't know what... Can you use... Chat room, help me here because I don't do it. Can you use Picasa with Windows? Because that would be another way to do it. There must be an iPhoto equivalent. I bet you some of the people listening there to this show at home have a business idea. Like something, I could really make a lot of money selling, I don't know. My mom is big into felting stuff, felt purses and stuff. Like I could make a lot of money felting purses. But how would I, you know, I know people would buy these, but how would I set up a store? And this is Big Commerce. I want to show you Big Commerce. I always thought of them, and I have to confess, in my ignorance, as a shopping cart program. No, they do it all, from web design to accounting to marketing. If you're not online selling, or if you're online selling and you're not happy with how it's working, Big Commerce will set this up for you for free for 30 days. You have a fully functional store at no expense to you. That should be enough time to figure out. If it says 15 days, ignore that. It's 30 days when you use my name, Leo, okay? 30 days. And that should be, so don't click that link. Try the one, hear about us on a radio or podcast. That's the link. And use my name, Leo. And you get 30 days. And I think if you have a good idea, 30 days of a store is enough to know whether that's going to make it or not. Then you could decide, do I pay? And it's very affordable. They got the features are amazing. Everything. They do SEO. They show you how to sell it on Facebook. They have a portable, mobile apps, including iPhone, iPad. They just set the whole thing up for you. Beautiful design. So they even do the website for you. Everything you need, drag and drop. It is a very sweet system. So if you haven't, if you're thinking about, I'd like to get into business online, this is a great company. We got our store, we're setting it up right now, bigcommerce.com. Use my name, Leo, for 30 days free. Liz is doing it. She likes it. She said it was fun. Normally we'd have Scott Wilkinson on at that time, and I'm not sure if he's here.
Sometimes
he takes Passover off because he has a little too much of the hamantaschen. Hey, Scott. How are you?
That's Purim, not Passover.
That's Purim. All right. Never mind. I'm sorry.
I did have a Passover Seder last night. Happy Passover.
I love
everyone out
it's
there.
One of my Easter favorite tomorrow. Feasts. Yeah. Well, hello. Happy Easter. Hi. Happy Passover to you.
Yes,
Scott
indeed.
Scott is the ultimate ecumenicist. And it doesn't matter if there's food and music.
If there's food and music,
I'm there. So Scott is the online editor for Home Theater Magazine. Joins us every week to ask answer questions about home theater. And I'm getting closer and closer to setting up my projection setup. I've got my Epson Cinema projector. I've been going back and forth on the screen goo versus a screen.
Yeah.
And we talked last week with Ron Rosberg, my old friend, who's I'm going to call him the cheapskate.
Very good.
And he was the guy who introduced me to Monoprice. Monoprice has really low prices on screens.
Really?
Yeah. The same as Screen Goo.
For separate screens?
Yeah. And Ron said, I did Screen Goo, and you have to be a professional painter to do this. It has to be very smooth and blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, exactly.
He said,
right.
Leo, because I was going to do this with my son as a project. He said, Leo, unless you are a professional or want to hire a professional, in which case it costs you more than a screen,
yeah,
get a screen. And they have motorized screens that come down from the ceiling.
Oh, really? You
and
mount
all
them
that.
On the ceiling?
Yeah, they're not expensive.
Well, you
how do you judge a screen?
Well, that's a very tricky thing. We just recently did a screen survey, a couple of screens. And there are a number of factors you want to take into account. First of all, do you want to do 3D? I know you're not a big 3D fan, so that's probably not a concern.
Well, how does that change the screen?
Well, it depends on the type of 3D. If you're going to use an Epson projector, or most projectors, it won't matter. If you're going to use an LG projector, they use polarized light,
oh,
which means you need a special kind of screen.
I see.
It's a silver polarization-preserving screen.
Right.
Which is what you get when you go into a commercial cinema, too.
Right.
IMAX or Real D. You get these polarized glasses, and they have a special silver screen in there, which is fine for 3D, but it's a little bit of a problem for when they show 2D in there.
Right.
Because it's not the ideal surface for 2D. Primarily, if you've got good light control, you want basically.
If you can darken the room, you're saying.
Correct. That's what I mean. Yes.
Yeah.
If you can darken the room. You want a white screen with not a lot of what's called gain.
These are matte. Is that what I want?
It could be. Does it say what the gain is?
Yeah, right. Let's see. Gain, huh?
Gain.
We're talking $500 for a motorized 120-inch screen.
Well, that's pretty darn good.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't know. 1.0 gain.
Oh, okay. So that's what's known as unity gain, which means that the light is going to be reflected over a wide area. So
it says 160-degree viewing angle.
Yes, exactly. Normally, with a screen that has some gain, and the most popular gain is 1.3, when you're directly in front of the screen, you get the most light. And as you move off angle, off axis, off the center, then the amount of light that you see that gets reflected in that direction diminishes. It goes down.
They also have matte gray or matte white. The matte gray is 0.8 gain.
Correct. And gray is generally better for situations where you do have some ambient light because it lowers the black level, the apparent black. So if you're going to watch during the day,
I get it.
Then you would probably want more of a gray screen. But if you've got good ambient light control, then I would recommend a white screen. Although the gray screen in general will lower the black level, and that's very important. We've talked about that on the show.
So maybe I should get a gray one.
Well, where is your?
And then they have them velvet wrapped. What the heck is that?
Well, that just means a velvet border.
Oh, that's for light spillover.
Right, which is kind of nice. If you can get a black velvet border around the screen,
it's only a couple bucks more.
isolates the image. It makes the image pop a little better.
Yeah.
You know, if you can spend the extra money.
Well,
Where is this projector going to be? Is it going to be in like a living room with a bunch of windows?
Yeah, but I can pull the curtains. And I would.
I would. Yeah. Any projector you would.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure. I would probably, I prefer a white screen myself. But then again, I'm a reviewer. And I'm trying to look and see.
What? You got more taste than me?
No.
What does that mean?
It means that I'm trying to evaluate the performance of the projector.
Right. You're trying to look at black level, so you don't want any help for the black level.
Correct.
But me, I don't mind a little help.
Then you might want to get a gray screen.
Yeah.
I don't know who makes these monoprice.
Well, it doesn't
screens.
Say. That's the problem, right?
It doesn't. They don't. Their HDMI cables and everything else is much the same. A lot of people really like their HDMI cables.
I always get cables there because digital, as far as I'm concerned, digital is digital. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you go over very long distances with an HDMI cable, you might want something a little more expensive. But in general terms, it's fine. And so I'd be interested. Boy, if you get this monoprice screen.
I'll invite you up. We could have movie night.
Yes. Very good.
We've kind of exhausted this subject, but we always talk about plasma LCD and rarely about projectors. And I just thought, especially now with good projectors coming in at a price comparable to a plasma or LCD.
Absolutely right.
And of course, you get much bigger screen size. You're talking 100, 120, 130 inches.
Yep. The only difference is you'll have a lot less light.
Yeah,
which mean than a flat panel,
right?
Which does mean you need to control your ambient light better. You have to be able to close those curtains, have blackout curtains, because if you don't, then the picture looks very washed out.
Right, we don't want that,
and you don't want that.
No, we really don't.
No.
All right. So, before we go, do you have a question from? Let me ask you a couple of things. So we never get time.
Sure.
First of all, what's your poll question at hometheater.com?
The poll question this week is, have you cut the cord?
No, cord cutters. My favorite topic. These are people who don't pay for cable.
Or satellite.
They just watch TV on the internet.
Right. Or perhaps online. Over the air.
I guess if you had over the air. If you live in a metro, that's not such a challenge because you could set up an antenna and you can get the live, you get the Super Bowl, the Oscars, all the things you don't get.
You get your local channels. You don't get things like Discovery or, ESPN or anything
like that. But Discovery and ESPN and HBO, many of these places, you can watch on the internet.
On the internet. That's exactly right. So one of our new bloggers, Barb Gonzalez, wrote a piece about her cord-cutting experience. And she's kind of in rural Oregon, so actually an antenna didn't work very well, the over-the-air antenna.
Hmm.
And she also pointed out there's a problem with cord cutting, which is the caps that internet service providers put on your downloading. And so if you want to watch high definition, very much high definition, you're going to run into that 150 gigabyte or 250 gigabyte cap at some point, and they're going to start charging you an arm and a leg for going over.
Yeah.
So that's a problem with cord cutting. So I was curious when Barb posted that blog, I said, I wonder what of our what our readers are doing. So,
well, go to hometheater.com and you can cast your vote. That's where Scott Wilkinson's online editor. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls after this.
Love my cable TV.
Oh, no, you don't.
Love my cable TV.
Uh-uh. I hate my cable TV. Actually, I love my cable TV. I hate my cable TV bill. That's the problem. Interesting, isn't it, that cord cutters are really taking over? And Scott pointed out a very interesting article that came out this week from IHS Screen Digest. They're an analyst company, and they made a very interesting observation. Last year, in 2011, physical video, whether it would be Blu-ray, DVD, I guess you'd have to include VHS tapes, physical media had a 2-to-1 advantage over online media when it came to viewing movies and TV. 2.6 billion units of physical media compared to 1.4 billion views of legal. Now, that's legal. If you include pirated movies, I'm sure it's completely the opposite. But you have to talk about, you know, what's been legal, what's been sold. They say based on growth of 135% in online video viewing so far this year, this, they say, 2012 will be the first year more movies are consumed online than on physical media. This will be the year it all changes. And I completely believe that. The writing's been on the wall. You know, it all started about 8 years ago when Blu-ray and remember HD DVD were in a battle and you couldn't decide. And I think consumers were so fed up with these format wars. Go back to the VHS versus Betamax format wars. Yeah, you have to be an old timer to remember that. But the Blu-ray HD DVD wars just annoyed consumers so much they just stayed away. And I think a lot of people never did buy high-def DVD players. They just stuck with their DVD players or they went to online. And I think that was it. That's it. It's all over. Scott will be back on Monday. He does a podcast for us, the Home Theater Geeks podcast. You can watch that at twit.tv. Mondays, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time. Or download it after the fact. And he's going to talk to Bob Hodes, who is a listening room expert. If you've been thinking, well, how do I make my stereo sound good? Or my home theater sound the best possible? We're talking sound. This guy will tell you. That's Monday, Home Theater Geeks, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern on my podcast network. Web7919 in our chat room says, Leo, the format wars started with 78s versus 33 1/3. Is that true? Maybe. Maybe. It could be. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Back to the phones we go. Jay is in Providence, North Carolina, our next caller. Hey, Jay, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I don't quite love my TV, mostly for the simple reason I bought it new and the manufacturer placed a yellow decal right on the screen, the LED screen, and I...
That is so stupid.
Indeed. And I called them to ask what their ideas might be for safely removing it, because I decided, other than that, I like the TV.
Yeah.
And... they just said, be careful, we don't really have anything in particular.
Well, why'd you put it on the screen, you nitwits?
I was pretty tempted to say that exactly to them.
You don't have a way to remove it, but you put it on there? What company?
That's Westinghouse.
Well, there you go. I don't even know who Westinghouse is anymore. I doubt very much it's a U.S. company.
It's certainly not made in the U.S.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. They put a big yellow sticker, and not one of those easy-to-remove static clings. Oh, no. It's got glue on it.
Right, and there's not even a little flap or anything. I figured there'd be, you know, a little tab or something. And in the store, it seems like maybe I was looking at another TV that had something similar. But this particular
one... I'd send it back and say, I don't know, there's something wrong with this Westinghouse. It's got a big yellow dot right in the middle of the screen. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll tell you, I know how to get rid of the goo in a sticker, but you're right. Doing it on a screen is a whole different kettle of fish. Goo Gone works great, but it's a solvent. It's a petroleum-based solvent. And on anything that is tough, it really does get rid of, you know, sticker glue. But do not do it on an LCD panel. In fact, AnandTech has pictures of what happens when you use Goo Gone on an LCD screen. You can't use a solvent on there. You can't use even Windex or an ammonia-based thing because it'll strip the screen coating off. And, of course, you don't want any liquid to drip into the bezel. So here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to go out and get a screen cleaner. There's clear Screen is one with a K. I have one here called Apple Juice. These are cleaners designed not to strip off the treatments on these screens, which means they're very mild, right? And so what happens, though, is that you're going to have to kind of soak it. What you're going to want to do is put this stuff on a sponge, just dampen a sponge, and just dab at that sticker, let it soak. Do it a few times. You're going to have to do it very gently and carefully. You can't scrub it. You can't use a Scotch-Brite. You can't use, you know, a Brillo pad. Yeah, it's making me queasy just thinking about it. What you want to do is you want to soak that goo, and you cannot use anything with a solvent. That would be ammonia. That would be anything with petroleum-based distillates in it. You have to use something designed for cleaning computer or television screens. And there are lots of products out there. Distilled water would be okay. But it's just going to take time.
And it's the same procedure for both LCD and LED screens?
Yeah. It's the same screen. LED is talking about the backlit. They're both LCDs. LED is just what kind of light is in there. Somebody in the chat room saying vinegar. I'm nervous about using anything too acidic. I'm telling you, stick with a screen cleaner designed for computer or television screens. That's the only thing I touch my screens on. And then never, ever, ever again buy anything from Westinghouse.
Yeah, I will say that they put it into the corner, but believe you me, it looks like an inverted sunrise whenever you're watching in the dark.
I can't believe the stupidity of doing that. That's just hard to believe. That's just hard to believe. Jay, I sympathize with you, and frankly, I'd have sent it back saying, you know, there seems to be a defect. I see a sunrise. There's some yellow thing. there's a problem. Can't believe, you know, it's amazing. It's probably done in the store, right? Probably not at the plant. Walter in Huntington, West Virginia. Hey, Walter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Well, I was listening to your Carbonite commercial. So my question then is, if I use Carbonite to save pictures from my iPad and I delete a picture from the iPad, will Carbonite still retain that picture?
Ah, so what you want to do is have some way of preserving. Now, the truth is, Apple has a solution for the iPad for this called iCloud.
But the trouble with that is they only save the pictures for 30 days. I talked to them.
Oh, that's something new, because it didn't used to be. It used to be that anything that you added to the photo stream and then would photo stream up to iCloud would last forever. Not the case, huh?
Not according to Apple.
No. That's good to know. And Carbonite does the same thing, and I think that that's because otherwise your storage would go through the roof. My recommendation is sync it up to your computer, and I'll talk about how to do...
Well, I don't have a computer.
Ah, all right, we'll solve this. It's not hopeless. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hang on. She forgot this thing. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. That's the number Walter called from Huntington, West Virginia. Now, Walter has an interesting issue. He's got an iPad. Did you get the new one, Walter?
Yes, I did.
You like it?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
So this is an interesting challenge because you have an iPad and you're creating content on it, pictures, of course, but, you know, you might write some notes or there may be stuff on there you want to save.
Right.
And you don't have a computer. So normally with an iPad, if you hook it up to a computer, it just goes zzz and backs it all up. Apple has, you know, they say solved this problem because they have iCloud. And now you just turn on the iCloud backup. Now, you only get 5 gigabytes and, of course, it's pretty easy to go over that, and then you have to pay for it. It's not hugely expensive, but it's $20 for $20 for 25 gigabytes a year, and $50 for 50 gigabytes a year. So it's not inexpensive. But you have a larger issue, which I didn't know about, which is if you delete the picture, you called Apple and they told you this.
Well, not about deleting the picture. What they told me is that the pictures only remain on iCloud for 30 days. No matter whether or not you delete them, they just remain. That's what they told me.
Ah.
I called up Apple, and you say that's new. So,
well, maybe it's not new. It's odd, though, because it's supposed to be a backup.
Yeah, right. Well, they say they give you 30 days so that you can then get them into a computer on a hard drive or something. But I just don't want to involve another computer.
I don't blame you.
So in the cloud somewhere.
I'm looking at Apple's website, and it says iCloud stores new photos for 30 days, so you have plenty of time to connect your iOS device to Wi-Fi and copy those shots, which is really annoying.
Right.
So, I think what you want to do is, boy, that's interesting. Let me look at iCloud, because that's photo stream. So there's on iCloud, there's the photo stream, which means every picture you've taken is automatically saved to this special thing called photo stream, and then copied to any other thing you want. You can also, I'm looking at iCloud, so you can turn photo stream off and on. Automatically uploads new photos to iCloud and downloads them to all your devices. But you can also back up documents and data in iCloud. And I wonder if I, for instance, saved that picture to the camera roll, if it then would be backed up as the camera roll. Wow, this is really a bit of a hole in iCloud. See, and I understand this because Apple, frankly, is not very good at cloud, at this whole cloud thing. And one of the problems Apple has is they really, until very recently, expected everyone who had an iPad to hook it up to a computer. And I think some of that is still sticking around. So here's the solution. You're going to have to proactively save what you want.
Yeah.
A couple of ways you could do that. You could email it to Gmail or an email account. Probably be the best way. So Google
Too slow.
Huh?
Too slow. You can only email 5 at a time.
Right.
If you choose 6
how many pictures a day are you taking?
Well, I have over about 300 photos now.
Yeah, I understand.
So it would take me too long to email them to myself. And, because you only do 5 at a time. But go ahead.
That's interesting. All right, there's also something called Dropbox.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Do you ever use Wi-Fi, or is it always 3G?
I use both. I use Wi-Fi at the library and 3G at home.
Okay. So you do have access to a faster connection, because you're going to need a faster connection if you want to back up these large things. Yeah, I would use Dropbox. Dropbox gives you 2 gigabytes for free. Which is probably
great.
Plenty. Dropbox.com. There's a Dropbox app that you put on the iPhone.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And
go ahead.
And then you tell the Dropbox app, you tell your camera to store your pictures, your camera roll in Dropbox. Then Dropbox will do that automatically. There are also photo apps, non-Apple photo apps, that will allow you to upload your photos to other places automatically. I use something from SmugMug. Now, these aren't free, but I use something from SmugMug called Camera Awesome when you take a picture, will automatically upload picture to the SmugMug picture sharing site. So it has a couple of advantages. One, you've got a full copy of it online, stored, backed up forever. They never delete it. And you can share it with other people. So you could say, hey, I got my photo album. Do you use Facebook?
Yes.
You can do the same thing with Facebook. You just upload your pictures to Facebook. Here's a free way to do it. This will be simple.
Okay.
Solved it. We just solved it. Do you mind putting it on your Facebook account?
No.
I think that's a good place, because that's a photo album now. You share it with family and friends. Yeah, free program called Batch. It's in the App Store. BATCH.
Okay.
It lets you go through your camera roll. assign pictures to albums. So you can say, here's my pictures of our fishing trip. And then press one button and upload that entire album to Facebook as an album.
I see. Great.
And then so you'll have a permanent copy. You'll be able to share that with family and friends. Costs you nothing. Batch is free. So is Facebook.
Great. Can I ask you a question on a different subject? Security?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. I would like to do stock trading on my Vanguard brokerage account. And I'm wondering how safe it is to do it using the library Wi-Fi system and how safe it is to do it using my AT&T 4G.
In both cases, it's safe because Vanguard provides you with a secure connection. So it's encrypted from you to Vanguard. So nobody can snoop on what's going on. It's absolutely safe.
Great. All right.
You are, Walter, a forerunner. This is what Apple wants. They don't want people to buy computers. They want them to buy iPads and use them as a full computer. And as you can see, there's some bumps along the road because its heritage is as a device to be tied to a computer. But I think this is absolutely, for many people, the right way to go. It's secure. It's simple. It's straightforward.
Well, they told me it's not that secure. You have to still be careful. You can't go to download unknown attachments, and you can't go to sites that are maybe not safe.
They're being over careful.
Uh huh.
It is much more secure than a Macintosh or a PC.
Really? Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you really, I know of no iPad attacks at the moment.
Good.
And because of the way the iPad works, everything is sandboxed. So you could get something bad on your system, but it can't access other stuff. It's safe.
Great.
So I think you're really in the most secure situation there is. You are in great shape, and I'm glad that you're able to use this and get work done. That's great.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Walter. You're in the forefront. You're a forerunner. You're an early adopter. Yeah. Batch is a simple, free program. Not many people use it, but for this particular purpose, it's great. You create albums on your iPhone or iPad and upload them to Facebook as albums, and they're safe there. And you can, by the way, say, not public. So it doesn't have to be automatically shared to everybody. You can say, this one's just for close friends, this one's for family, this one's for everybody. So you control that as well. BATCH, like it's like a batch upload tool. We were talking about big screens, and a couple of people have some suggestions for me. Let's start with Pete in Riverside, California. Hey, Pete.
Yeah, hey, Leo. You know, on that iCloud, just real quickly, when you type things into their word processing application on Apple, whatever it's called, that does go to iCloud.
Pages, yeah.
And it'll say that stays there forever.
Yeah, this is something that I didn't know about. Apparently, it's only photos. They only keep the photos for 30 days. And I think that's the photo stream. And I think if you copied it to another app, it would save it.
Yeah,
hey, hang on. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Okay. Playground. Across the monkey bars to the merry-go-round. And Emmy Lou got caught passing me a note. Before the teacher took it, I read what she wrote.
Oh, no!
Do you love me? Do you want to be
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kyle Benham, our musical director, selects all the songs, attempting to find appropriate tunes for our audience, and then makes a playlist at the end on Spotify, and you can get that at our website, techguylabs.com. Or follow Kyle on Google+, because he posts it there, too. K-Y-L-E space B-E-N. H-A-M. We were talking to Pete in Riverside, California, and we're talking about projection, which we don't talk a lot about. We everybody's got LCD TV. Some people have plasmas. I'm a plasma fan, but I was thinking, in my current setup, I'm too far from the 55-inch TV. It's smaller than my iPad held at arm's length, so I want a really big screen. Of course, the way to get a really big screen at an affordable price is projection, front projection. TVs. And you can then go, depending on the projector and how far away it is and its capabilities, you can go to 120 inches or more. So is that what you do, Pete?
Well, Leo, I followed with interest your saga over the last few weeks, sir, and I went through the exact same thing a year ago, and I thought about it and got the measuring tape out and did all kinds of stuff, and then one of my requirements, because this is for grandkids, to attract grandkids to the house.
Yes, I know that feeling. Please come visit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, please.
So anyway, my other requirement, though, was Kinect. And so I bought a 360 and a Kinect and everything after I figured out how to do this. Now, when you put when you put one on the ceiling, though, what you're going to find is you have to have such a long throw distance
right. That
you're going to have your head is going to show on the wall.
Oh, interesting.
So I was going to put a 120-inch screen up and all this kind of stuff, and I had the room and the living room and everything, blah, blah, blah. Well, so what I wound up doing, to make a long story short, is I found an 82-inch screen that Mitsubishi makes. It's DLP. It's exactly the same technology. And on those rear projectors, you'd be amazed how thin they are against the wall now.
I know. They've really
They're
gotten good.
Bad.
So 82, and you find, is sufficient, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
And they're not very
I've
expensive. I'm looking.
Long.
They're $1,700 bucks on Amazon.
No, Leo, I was looking at $20,000, $25,000, you know, to get everything installed. And then what I wound up doing, I went down to Best Buy on a weekend and came home with under $10,000 and just set it all up myself. There was no setup.
So instead of all of that problem with a projector and all, just get a... I didn't know they made them that big. 82-inch screen.
No, 82 inches, Leo. And, I mean, you can sit, you know, easily 15 feet back from that thing. And I'm telling you, you watch some of these videos, some of these 3D videos, and I know what you say about 3D. I was exactly the same way.
I think at home, 3D is a little bit better. I don't know why, but it just seems a little bit better.
These Mitsubishis, you're thinking, oh, old rear projector. No. Because they're DLP, they have all of the online capabilities, all of everything you can imagine. They have a lot of the Roxy stuff built into, Roku stuff built into them,
Yeah. All
of that stuff. And they're constantly being upgraded online, so you're constantly getting new firmware. They're treated just like the most up-to-date overheads that there are, and even the TVs. Now, as soon as you go to an overhead, you know, I don't care what anybody says, you're going to lose, you know, definition. You know, you're going to have problems.
No, I agree. They don't look as good as those bright, bright screens, do they?
Why spend $25,000 when you can spend that? Now, if you just want to spend $25,000.
No, fine. I don't. I assure you. Now, that's the part of the point of this, Pete, is that the projectors, good projectors, have gone down in price to approximately the same as a regular.
This thing is just, it's self-contained. There's no tuning. There's no nothing. And I'm sorry, with the 3D part of it, I got Blu-ray 3D because it's compatible with that. I got the Panasonic Blu-ray DVD player, which is important. And I went down and got Denon?
Denon's good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was looking at a real expensive sound system. But then I got to talking to them, and they had an all-in-one box set, and you just sat down there, and I went through all this compute programming, you know, to get it all placed in the right place. But then after I played a few movies, I just would move the stands around, and I, you know, you can't tell.
Well, Pete, you got me thinking. I thank you for the review and the encouragement, and it's true. Nowadays, I didn't realize they went up to 82 inches. That's pretty hefty for a direct view television set. Bill in Phelan, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. I'm your Planet of the Apes buddy from YouTube.
Yes.
That Roddy McDowell stuff.
Yes. How's that going for you?
Yeah, that's going okay. I took a little hiatus to take care of some outside stuff. I'm not on the internet much right now, but I'm going to be working with a guy named Vern Geach, who also has a YouTube channel there, and we're going to be doing some new Planet of the Apes stuff, and I worked with him 36 years ago, and we're just hooking up again.
That's great.
Yeah.
We should explain
that
Bill wears a wears an ape costume. Yeah, what's his website?
It's on YouTube, and it's Cyberlite. It's Cyborlite.
Cyborlite.
Yeah, Cyberlite.
UFO Bob's secret base.
Yeah, he's got a whole bunch of that stuff, but he also has Salvation for the Planet of the Apes, and that's something I did with Vern in 1976. We did an anamorphic 16-millimeter widescreen, and now it fits the 16:9. We were talking about all the aspect ratios before?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually shot anamorphic. And look at the enhanced version of Salvation for the Planet of the Apes, and he's got like a little lead into it showing kind of the history of what we did back then.
So this is when you guys were students at Orange Coast College.
Well, I was a professional. He was a student, and I was booked into the college to help judge a film competition, and I hooked up with Vernon, and we did the film thing together.
That's neat. So this is a fan video, Planet of the Apes fan video. I got to say, the costumes look great.
So those are originals. That's because they came right from the studio. Remember, I had done the television series, and I had done all the promotions back
weren't
then.
Weren't you a good mentor for him? That's great.
Yeah, well, we're actually both the same age. We're both 60 now, so, you know.
It all merges together now, yeah. Well, what can I do for you today?
Well, it's because of all of the great help that you've given me, I want to give something to you today.
Well, now, you're a pro in this field, so I'm going to listen to you carefully.
Okay, well, this is a recommendation that I got from some professionals in the home theater installation industry.
Yeah.
And this is going to floor you when you hear this.
All right.
You were talking before about blacking out your room. Your curtains have a material behind them usually called blackout material.
Right.
But it's a misnomer because it's white, and it's just rubberized to black out the light from the outside. But it's actually a white material.
Those aren't real blackout curtains is what you're saying.
Right. You go to a place like Joann Fabrics or one of the big fabric stores around, and I'm sure you've got them around you. You can buy the blackout material raw on a roll at about $5 a yard, and 60 inches wide is the standard size. So there, that would be the vertical of your screen. You could have up to a 5-foot-tall screen and any length you want. And the big secret, Leo...
Hold on. We got to take a break. We'll find out what the big secret is when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There are monkeys walking around everywhere. Thank you for the steep barley, baby. This would be a good time to talk about Ford. It looks like Roddy McDowell. That looks like Roddy McDowell. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I wanted to talk about Ford Uplink, actually. A commercial. Yes, a commercial for Ford Uplink. As you know, I drive my great Ford Mustang, but there's something missing because it's a 2010. It doesn't have Uplink. The new Ford Sync has Uplink, and it is so cool. And I could talk to you guys because you're technical. It's an API for app developers on iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone. Lets them write apps that you control with your voice with the Ford Sync. So when you get in the car, suddenly you've got, you know, you're adding, as soon as you plug in your phone, you're adding capabilities. I think it actually works with Bluetooth A2DP as well as USB. All Ford Sync vehicles have USB, and you just connect it up, charges the phone. And then you could do things like control Pandora. So I've talked before about Sync, the whole idea of you keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. It makes you safer, a safer driver, because you're not looking down here and twiddling the knobs. And what you do is you press a button, it goes boom, and you talk to the car, and you say, you know, cabin temperature, destination. Or you say, hey, open Pandora. And play my Lady Gaga station. You can do thumbs up, thumbs down. You can do skip a song. You can save songs. They have Stitcher now for podcasts, Slacker Radio. They've added iHeartRadio, which has got to kill some radio stations. Because you could listen to KFI. You could listen to my station anywhere in the country with Ford Sync. You can have your saved stations. It's called the Thumb Play service. So you could say, I want to hear Leo. And it pops up. You can skip to the next song if there were a song. Actually, you can't do that on mine. That's they have also a service, a radio service, kind of Pandora-like radio service on iHeartRadio. So they have the thumbs up and skip and everything. They have Sync Destinations, which is a nav program from your phone. So you have up-to-date maps and all of that stuff. Ford Sync, many of the Ford Sync vehicles don't have full big screens. They have little screens. So this way you get color maps and all of that. NPR is on there with latest breaking news and your favorite NPR programs. Anyway, more and more apps are going to come out. Ford has a Sync mobile application developer network, so developers can contact Ford and say, I want to make my app Sync compatible. So you're going to see hundreds of these soon. It really is very cool. Find out more about Ford, the great technologies they're putting in their vehicles at Ford.com/technology. But the best way, go to a Ford dealer near you and drive one. Yeah. Sue knows. She's going like this. drive one at a Ford dealer near you. But make sure you say, hey, I want to drive one with AppLink. I want to see how that, and bring your phone so you can tie it in together. It's pretty cool stuff. Ford.com/technology. We were talking to Bill in Feeling, California about, he's a pro, he's in the business. We're talking to him about screens and projection TVs, and he says he has the secret.
The big secret, Leo, and that was a good tease through the break.
Made everybody listen. Nobody's going anywhere. They want to hear the secret.
Yes, well, here it is. It's blackout material that can be bought any length you want. You can buy it by the yard, about $5, $6 a yard, and up to about 60 inches standard wide. So the big secret is that in the professional home theater installation trade, there's a lot of guys that use this material and then go to somebody who has a good industrial sewing machine or just a heavy-duty home sewing machine. They sew the border around it, they punch it, they put the grommets in it, and some people think they're getting a Stewart film screen. This material has a...
Wait a minute, you're saying... I misunderstood. I thought this was... You were saying use this for your curtains. You're saying use this for the screen.
This is the screen. This has a rubberized material on... Picture kind of like a light sailcloth fabric.
Yeah.
With a very tight weave. But then the weave is completely closed by this white material, almost like that screen glue you're talking about, only this is done for you on the fabric in the factory. And they claim, the installers claim, Leo, that it's got about a 1.0 to 1.1 gain. It's right in that neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
What I would suggest you do is tell Scott Wilkinson to go down to Joann's or one of the other big fabric places, buy a yard or two of this, pin it half over a professional screen so you can project on both at the same time and do all the gain tests and everything and see what he comes out with, because there are actually professional installers doing this. I made one myself. I needed a quick and dirty for some old 16-millimeter stuff I was projecting, and in my air quotes screening room, you know, because I really don't have a real screening room, just a big room to project it in, I needed about 4 feet high, a little under 4 feet high by about 10.5 feet wide for CinemaScope. And what I did was I literally made a birch frame. I went down to Lowe's, local building supply store, bought birch wood 1x3, and made a frame like you would for a painter's canvas.
And you stretched it, and you put the... Now, tell me again the name of this. Is there a particular name of this fabric? Just blackout?
Now, there's a lot of different manufacturers, Leo, but the technical term in the sewing industry is blackout material.
So you want? I'm going to go to Joann Fabric, and I'm going to get blackout material.
Blackout material, 60 inches wide, standard width, 5 feet wide.
And I'm going to make a frame.
It's the liner that you put in your decorative curtains to block out light from the outside.
Wow.
But it's actually white. It's actually white. And like I said, black is a misnomer. It blacks out the light, but
yeah,
the material is actually white.
Yeah.
So it's attractive when you do see the liner.
It makes a screen. Bill, I thank you for the secret. And I am so now... I've learned too much. I'm going to buy a radio, and I'm going to stay in my house and listen to the radio, and I will imagine really big pictures. Neil in Rochester, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Neil.
I followed you since Tech TV.
Thank you.
And also followed you into Canada.
Thank you. Good to have you.
Hey, got a question.
Yes.
Beginning of the year, it's been a day since the Quadra, since I've had an Apple. Beginning of the year, I bought a MacBook Pro.
Right.
And I'm curious to know, is there a good way of detaching widgets from the dashboard to the desktop? I have found a way of doing it, but when I detach them, the widgets seem to stay over all the applications I have open.
Ah. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of complicated. You have to turn on a developer mode for the dashboard, and then you can drag the, you know, basically you're turning on a debugger mode that is designed for people who are writing dashboard widgets. They don't want to have to open the dashboard every time. And so you can drag it kind of to the screen. I'll put a link in the show notes to a Macworld article about how to do this. But you say you don't, the widgets are floating above all windows. And that's exactly right. Which is kind of annoying. It's not going to work There's no way. It's just because it's for developers. It's not. They're not. Apple's not trying to make this so you can do what you want to do. They're making it so developers can work on their widgets, and developers don't mind the fact that the widget is always visible. And that's just the way it is, as far as I know. I'm looking through this the comments on this article to see if there is any way to make it so that they are not floating, but part of the desktop. Because wouldn't that be nice? But it looks like there is no way to do that. And that's because Apple's not intending to make this be a very cool feature of the the operating system. Yeah, I don't see. A number of people said, is there any way not to make this floating? No. One thing you might do is just look for an application that does the same thing as the dashboard widget. Often that's the case. You could find something like that and then use that instead. Dan in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hi, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hey, hi, Leo.
Earth to
hi.
Calgary. Hey, Dan.
Great pleasure to talk to you, Leo.
My pleasure.
I have a question for you regarding MOV file repair. I actually was on vacation recently and was recording a short movie with my Nikon Coolpix P300, which records movie in MOV format. And I was not actually careful enough. When I finished recording, I shut down the camera, which was actually a really bad idea. So I have the file.
Is it recording to flash memory, or is this one of those CD recording cameras?
It's recording on HD memory card.
It's a memory card. Okay, good. Yeah.
So I can freely move this file back and forth wherever I want, but I can't play it. And
right.
I
are you on Windows or Mac?
It's Windows.
Okay.
And,
so I'm going to point you.
I went to Google and basically, in total, spent almost a day trying to do something. And actually, there are many.
There are lots of repair programs, right? So the one that I'm generally recommending is from a German company. See, the Germans make great stuff. Go to grauonline.com, G-R-A-U online. .de, and they have an HD video repair utility. It may well be that it's not repairable, in which case no program will help. But if it's possible to extract, and this one works specifically with a variety of well-known cameras, including the Nikon, I believe. So, if it's possible, in other words, it will recover it. Grauonline, grauonline.de, and now it's not a free program, but they do half of it for free, so you at least know whether it works. It's kind of a unique way of doing it. They have a Mac and Windows version, and the demo file, the demo version, will only do 50 megabytes of the file. It will only do half of it. I hope that works for you, Dan. It's not, the file is damaged because of how you closed it off. 8888 Ask Leo. You know, another good place to go to get answers to these questions, our chat room, great people in there, smart. In fact, a lot of times I'm looking to them for the answers. You'll find the chat room, links to our show notes, audio and video, and more at our website, techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. And I am going to eat soup. Yeah, it's Happy Hips. There you go, Ozzy. It's more Happy Hips for Ozzy. Oh, who let the dogs? That's my dog, my little dog, my papillon. Ozzy has joined us in the studio. So if you have any questions about snacks, treats, or cats, well, he's got a little prejudiced about cats, but he'll answer your questions here. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Steve's in Los Angeles. Our next caller. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I've got a Windows computer that I've had for about 2.5 years, and I'm having a video problem. All of a sudden, it'll start. I'll get this conglomeration of multicolored lines across the screen. It's like a horizontal line, and the screen will freeze up, and the computer still works. The hard drive still works. And I just have to give it a hard boot, you know, to get back onto it.
Now, when you say a hard boot, do you mean an actual kick to the midsection, or do you reboot it?
Well, that's a good idea. Maybe I should try that. But actually, no, I just reboot it. And it's getting worse and worse. You know, sometimes it just freezes up and it stays on the screen. At other times, I'll get that multicolored image, and then that lasts maybe 1 or 2 seconds, and then it goes black.
Right.
And I know the monitor, I mean, the hard drive is still working, but the monitor light on the front goes orange, so I'm assuming the monitor is shutting down.
But yeah, the orange means the monitor is no longer getting a signal.
Okay, yeah.
So that sounds to me like your video card is dying, or the cable. It doesn't have to be the video card. In fact, it's almost always best when you're trying to troubleshoot something like this to eliminate the quick and easy thing. So if you have another video card cable, it's a desktop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have another video cable, I would try that just to make sure it's not the cable. And you've already checked the connection, right?
Well, no.
You know, if the cable fell off, this is exactly what it would look like. If it were loose. If it were loose. So make sure the cable's secured at both ends. That'd be the first thing. If it still does that, then replace the cable. And if it still does that, then it's probably the video card.
So just buy a new video card.
Yeah, but I'd get a cable first, just in case.
Make sure I have a good cable.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, if the cable's got, you know, frayed or going bad, or even just loose, you'd get exactly this symptom.
Okay.
Usually means that your card is going. The chat room suggesting, and this could be the case, if it's a high-end video card with a fan on it, if the fan has died or stopped turning, the card is overheating. So as you use it, it gets hotter and hotter, starts to put those bars and lines up, and finally just stops.
I'm not sure if it has a fan or not.
Yeah, if it's a those are only like the high-end gaming cards. This is a bigger issue if you don't have a separate video card. Do you know if you have a separate video card?
No, I don't.
Yeah, most of the time, inexpensive computers use video on the motherboard. If that's the case, then it's not going to be replacing the video card. You might need to replace the motherboard. Although, you could get a separate standalone video card, put it in, maybe that would work. Maybe it's just the video circuitry on the motherboard that's gone.
Well, it's an ATI Radeon video card.
Oh, okay, then it's a separate card, yeah. Yeah, it could just be, I would look and see if there's a fan on it. If there is, and make sure that's spinning and clean and not obstructed. It could just be overheating. But ultimately, it may just be a new video card. Good news, video cards aren't that expensive.
Yeah, well, updating a driver doesn't help. Is that correct?
It could be. I mean, again, you always want to do the simple, easy things like check the cable, replace the cable, update the driver. Those things are all simple and easy to do. They don't take time. They don't cost much money. If all of those fail, then you want to start looking at things like replacing the video card.
Okay. Now, don't you have to match up a video card with your power source?
You can get a video card that takes too much power if you're not careful. How old is the computer?
About 2.5 years.
I think you probably are right. Don't get the high-end gaming card, but are you a gamer?
No.
I didn't think so. Just get an inexpensive card. If you get, it doesn't have to match up. It just can't draw too much power.
What's a good brand?
ATI is very good. There really aren't very many to choose from anymore. ATI makes them. They're owned by AMD. And then NVIDIA is the other competing company, but NVIDIA just designs them, and then many companies make NVIDIA. I'd stick with your ATI. Do you watch TV on it? Do you use the Radeon for a television tuner?
No.
No. I'd just get a new ATI. But do update the drivers first. Check the cable first. Do all those cheap things before you go out and buy a new Radeon. But I think you could get a new Radeon fairly cheaply. $30, $40, $50. It'd probably be comparable. In fact, you might look for one that's, you know, exactly the same model. If it's only a couple of years old, they might still make one in that range. Shouldn't be expensive to replace. David in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Good. Yeah, I'm a old-time computer guy. In fact, I went to oldcomputers.net, and the very first computer that I programmed on was in 1975, an IBM 5100.
Holy cow. Was that a mini?
That was considered the first portable computer.
How heavy was that?
55 pounds.
Yeah, that's portable. Real lightweight.
Real lightweight. Yeah, and then I went out, I built in high school, I built the Heathkit H8.
Oh,
1977.
Yeah. Yeah, my college roommate built one of those, yeah.
And then let's see, what else do we got here? I got to make a little list. In 1983, I went online, was doing online banking with a TRS-80 Model 100.
Remember in the early days of online banking, what it was a black screen with white text, it was probably not even 40 by 24, and you'd have menu items, and I used to do that on Bank of America.
The Model 100, the display was 40 characters by seven lines.
Right, and you could bank on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't easy.
Serve, and you were banking, and you were going.
Jeez,
and
I remember that.
What do you use those computers for?
Well, I check my balance.
That's about all you
That's
can do.
That's about all you can do. Yep. We've come
anyway,
a long way. We have.
I've got a business, and I've been networking, you know, going to a lot of networking groups. And I went to a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and they had a computer guy there, and he's saying, hey, you guys all got to be on Pinterest. That's the latest, the hottest. You know, this is going to be the fastest growing. And,
I can't think of a single reason why anybody has to be on Pinterest.
Well, he's just saying, you know, for business, you want to be on there.
Oh, really? Oh, you mean that's where you should promote your business?
Yeah, that's where you should be.
Well, if you sell stuff. So what is Pinterest? Just briefly, I'll describe it for those for the four of you who haven't yet set up an account. It's a site where you pin things, you bookmark, in effect, things you like, things you want to buy. And it's very popular right now. Oddly enough, it's still not open to the public. You have to request an invitation, but it doesn't take very long to get one. I think that's mostly a ploy to get it, to make it feel like it's something special. And it's certainly the fastest growing social media site out there, mostly with women. I would say the majority, not vast majority, but probably 70 or 80% of the pinners on Pinterest are women, because it's used heavily for fashion, for jewelry, for furniture, for the kinds of things the ladies are interested in. But you'll see some geeky stuff on there as well. I'm seeing camera lenses.
Yeah, I'm in the silk screening business, so I could actually promote some of my designs.
I think that would probably be a very good idea. So that's what he's talking about. If you're in a business where you sell goods, Pinterest could be very valuable to you. What we're finding is that when something is pinned, it generates a lot of referrals. People follow that pin and go back and buy the things that are pinned. So it is. It's a very good way to advertise, in effect.
Well, so, but my question is, you know, so I never heard of this. So I go online, I Google Pinterest, and you see their front few page or taglines there. And then right below it, you see an attorney's line saying, I pulled all of my pictures off of Pinterest due to their liability statement.
Right. So here's the problem. Here's what's going on with Pinterest. First of all of these sites, from Facebook on down, when they first write the terms of service, do the thing to protect them the most, which say, basically, we reserve the rights to everything you post here forever in perpetuity in all forms of media. And people usually leap from that to the idea that, wow, that site's claiming my stuff. And in fact, it's mostly because the lawyers say, look, you got to assert that, otherwise you can get sued for storing it on your hard drive, stuff like that. Often these sites, and Pinterest did this, will then back down a little bit, saying, no, and they rewrite it to say, you know, we don't assert ownership to your stuff. We just, you know, we may have to make copies to cache it and things like that. Pinterest has been accused in the past of copyright issues because if you pin something on Pinterest that you don't own, which is most of the time, in theory, the person being pinned could say, hey, I own that. So let me tell you how Pinterest has resolved it and why I don't think it's a problem, but I'll have to do that after this break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The advice you hear on the Tech Guy show is not meant to serve as valid, useful, or legal advice in any respect. If any of the advice you are given from the Tech Guy Show concerns you, you should seek competent counsel. Never take the advice of the Tech Guy as anything but entertainment. Leo Laporte, I should do that at the beginning of every show. I should have a disclaimer. Because if in this litigious world, everybody's terrified. Oh my God, am I going to get sued? This is the Tech Guy Show is entertainment only. Please do not take Leo's advice.
Yep.
So we're talking to David in Rancho Cucamonga, who raises a question that really the whole world has been talking about for the last week, which is Pinterest. By the way, amazing success story. It went last year in 2011 from 50,000 users in March to 11 million users by December. It's probably tripled that by now. It is the fastest growing social site since Facebook. And it's very simple. You create a Pinterest account. You got to get an invite once you create an account. Then as you surf the net, you pin things. You go, oh, I like that dress. Oh, those shoes are cute. Man, I'd love to know how to make that soup. Let me pin that recipe. And this is something that's been going on since blogging was created. It's a form of blogging, right? In fact, that's what blogging was originally, was posting links to stuff you liked. That's all this is. The reason people got nervous is this photographer, Kirsten, and her post, "Why I Tearfully Deleted My Pinterest Inspiration Boards." Kirsten is a photographer and a lawyer. And really just lost sight of, you know, reality. Pinterest does, as do most sites, kind of try to pass all liability onto you. They want to indemnify themselves. Because the truth is, a copyright holder isn't going to go after Kirsten or you or me. They're going to go after the deep pockets. And if they think Pinterest is making money, they're going to go after Pinterest. So Pinterest says, it's your responsibility. Don't post anything copyrighted here. If you read their terms of service, they're very clear that you should only post stuff that you own. You acknowledge and agree that to the maximum extent permitted by law, the entire risk arising out of your access to and use of the site applications and services of site content remains with you. That's a lawyer speaking right there.
Yeah, that's the issue is... You know, 99% of the time when you get the disclaimers from Apple or wherever, IBM or Microsoft, I'm just clicking it and saying, yeah, no problem. I don't even read it because it's 100 pages long. It's just this site. All of a sudden, you're looking in Google and right there, you know, this pretty high ranking. Oh, look at the legal disclaimer. Don't sign it.
Yeah, it's silly. Now, I could think of some scenarios. For instance, if somebody created a Pinterest board that was Life magazine-ish images or articles from Newsweek and just started putting wholesale that content up there, then Newsweek or Life would be mad at them and would say, wait a minute, you know, people are reading our stuff on Pinterest instead of subscribing. Stop it. That's legitimate. Pinterest provides them with a standardized process the Digital Millennium Copyright Act provides for. It's the same process YouTube and everybody else use. YouTube does the same thing, by the way. They say, we are not responsible if you put copyrighted material up here. And there's a process called the takedown process that they provide to copyright holders. They can go to YouTube or Pinterest and say, that's our stuff, take it down. They take it down. And that, by the way, lets YouTube and Pinterest off the hook. It's the safe harbor provision of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So people are worried, well, now am I going to get sued? No. No. Don't worry about it. No. Now, so, you know, what Pinterest is saying is, well, if you like a dress, don't post the picture from the dressmaker's website. Go take a picture of it and post your own picture. That's not what Pinterest is set up to do. It's set up for you as you surf the web to make a note of stuff, to say, oh, I really like that dress. I like that table. I want to remember that so I can buy it later. Do you think the maker of the dress minds if you do that? Heck no.
So, as long as it's a positive message.
Well, I mean, look, we live in a litigious world. You can get sued for anything, whether there's merit or not. That's the way it is. All a lawsuit means is you go to a court for redress. The court can laugh you out of the court. The court, if it feels it's frivolous, can even slap you with costs. Mm-hmm. This is a non-issue, in my opinion. Pinterest is exactly the same as Tumblr, as Facebook, as YouTube, as every other site. And I think it is Here's the real truth of this, and this comes from a Wall Street Journal article about Pinterest. And the guy says, and this is really the common sense truth of it, if you post something on Pinterest, don't do it. Don't claim that it's yours if it's not, and don't try to profit from it if it's not yours. If you merely post it because you like it, you're fine. No judge in the world is going to say, I fine you $10 million and 100 years in the salt mines. Where you get in trouble if you say, I did it, and you didn't, or you try to make money off of it, and you didn't. If you took this radio show, look, here's a good example. This radio show has value to me and to the publishers of it, the copyright holders, the premier radio networks. If you took the audio of this radio show and posted it on Pinterest, I certainly wouldn't mind. I don't think Premier Radio Networks would mind. If you asserted you did it or you tried to charge for it, that'd be a different situation. Now, there are some situations I can think of. For instance, some of my colleagues charge for podcasts of their radio show. I don't. I give it away. If they charge for it, you post a free copy on Pinterest, then maybe they're going to get upset. But what's going to happen is not they're going to sue you. They're going to go to Pinterest and say, please take that down. That's what happens on YouTube all the time. So in other words, your business, what your business is what again?
Silkscreen printing.
Right. So you would like to have people pin your silkscreens, right? Because it's good for business.
Yeah, my designs. Any designs that I make, I'd like to put up there, customer designs. Sometimes I have customers coming to me saying they want to put a Mickey Mouse on a shirt, and I got to say,
right.
No, can't really do
right.
that.
But I could tell you right now, if I pin a Mickey Mouse T-shirt from Disney, I'm not going to get sued by Disney. Disney's going to applaud and say, yeah, because those pins all have links back to where you buy them, every one of them. It's good for business. You should put up your silk screens because maybe people will follow you, see them, repin them. That's the kind of the currency of Pinterest is, oh, I like that. You repin it, and that's how stuff goes viral, and lots of people see it. That's good for you because every link, every pin, every image has a link back to you.
Sounds good.
But if somebody now, and this is where you had a right to get upset, if somebody says, I like that silk screen, I did it, then you go to Pinterest and you say, that's not true, take it down, and they will.
I hear you.
You're not going to sue that guy, are you?
No, it's probably too much of an expense to go through it. You know,
it's hardly worth it.
Yeah,
it's hardly worth it. And so just put yourself in the same shoes. You know, and I admit we're litigious, and anybody can sue for anything, and oftentimes people do. But the courts are not crazy. They sometimes appear to be, but they're not crazy.
A lot of times,
and that's why people are skittish and scary. There's too many lawyers.
Well, I thank you for your advice. I think I'll start getting ready. I've already got an account. It took about 2 days for them to accept me. And, all you do is go in there and say you want to be invited, and 2 days later I get the invite. So it wasn't too bad.
No, that's all about false scarcity.
Yep.
You can't just join. You have to get an invite.
A plug for one of your sponsors. I've been using Ring Central for a couple of years, and I really like it.
Really oh, yeah.
Service.
We use them here in our small business. It's a great small business solution. You don't have to have any hardware in the basement or anything. It just happens. I have it on my phone, too, which I love, yeah.
Yeah, it goes right to your phone.
Isn't
800
great?
Numbers, link to your cell phone, to your office, everywhere. It's
great. It makes a small business look like a big business.
I hear you.
Yeah. Hey, thank
you,
David.
Thank you very much.
What's the name of your business? Let's give you a plug.
The Image Emporium, and our website is theie.biz.
Theie.biz. Hey, thanks for the call, David. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I'm the guy they call Little Mickey Mouse. Not a sweetie down in the chicken house. Neither fat nor skinny, she's the horses. Winnie is my little Minnie Mouse. When it's feeding time for the animals, and they howl and growl like the cannibals, I just turn my heel to the hen house heel, and you'll hear me sing this song.
You're going to get sued by the Walt Disney Company.
Bring it.
Kyle says, bring it. See, we should explain. Actually, I don't even want to explain. There's nothing to explain. Kyle Benham, our musical director. There is no explaining him, that's for sure. Let's go to Speedway, Indiana. And Matt's on the line. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I am great. I guess you're getting excited. May's coming.
Yep, it's getting close. We heard them practicing the other day.
Wow, how fun. Do you get out of town when the Indianapolis 500 comes to town, or do you just enjoy it?
Oh, no, we got tickets. We go.
You go. I think if you live in Speedway, you got to go.
I think you either got to go or you got to leave, I guess.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
But what I wanted to ask you about is I'm really interested in possibly wanting to be a cord cutter.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm familiar with, you know, where to get my content, mostly with the help of Veronica Belmont's Mega List.
Isn't that a great list?
It's wonderful.
She did such a great job of, and it's really crowdsourced. So it's bit.ly/SETTOP, I think, yes. And that will give you a rundown of all the different, you know, Roku and Apple TV and all of those set-top boxes. And what they do and what they don't do. And that this is an essential tool for the cord cutter because, of course, the reason you can cut the cord is because you connect your television to the Internet.
Right.
You're not really cutting the cord. You're just using the Internet instead of cable or satellite.
But I'm a little bit concerned on, you know, you hear all this stuff about data caps that the you know, the Internet providers are putting on.
Yeah, well, isn't that interesting that Comcast instituted a 250 gigabyte a month cap? Isn't that interesting?
Right.
Trying to preserve their business, are they?
Right. And I just didn't know how much, you know, how much, you know, data usage, you know, a family is going to use trying to be a cord cutter and getting all their, you know, getting all their content off the Internet.
I can give you a thumbnail. I mean, it really does depend on how many people are watching and how many, you know, if you're all watching at the same time and that kind of thing. It's roughly a gigabyte and a gigabyte a movie. Roughly, very roughly. Netflix, for instance, will, depending on how fast your connection is, adapt. So it can be, I think Netflix can be as low as 700 megabytes for a two-hour movie and as high as a couple of gigabytes, roughly.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I was just more concerned, I guess, you know, on like some of the network TV stuff like the kids would want to watch, you know, that they might find on. Would that go in the same category? Like
sure, a download or streaming is the same. You know, I mean, it's if you're going to get a gigabyte for 2 hours is just that's whether you stream or download, because really streaming is just playing while you're downloading something.
Right,
there's no difference.
Now, how would with that whole spouse acceptance factor being a factor in all this is.
I bet you're close enough to Indy to get the local stations via.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But I'm more worried about her giving up her DVR'd content, you know, that she gets off.
Well, in a way, what's good about cable cutting is that you get DVRing without DVRing, you know. So the here's the thesis behind cable cutting is instead of paying for a lot of stuff I don't want to watch. I'm going to pay for, you know, all you can eat. I'm going to save money by paying for just what I want. And most shows you can do that with. If you go to, you can look at iTunes and see what's available. Amazon is another good choice to see what's available. Most shows, but sometimes there are gaps. For instance, a very good example, HBO and Game of Thrones. Now, Game of Thrones, you may want to watch right now. Season 2 just launched. You know, we got the second one coming up Sunday. You won't get to get that if you're a cord cutter for a year.
Right.
Because HBO, in their infinite wisdom, that's sarcasm, by the way, in their infinite wisdom has decided. Now, many, for instance, Mad Men, I can watch at midnight the day it's released. Because AMC sells it. And I paid $40 for the full season. I get high-quality copies of it on my iTunes. It arrives at midnight that night. Not the same time, but a few hours later. So I watch it on Monday instead of Sunday. And I own it. So I can watch it anytime. And that's kind of nice. In fact, Mad Men's kind of a good example because seasons 1 through 4, the previous seasons, are available for, you know, virtually for free if you have a Netflix streaming subscription. You can watch all 4 seasons. So it really is dependent on the network and the show. Major League Baseball, if you're willing to pay, I think it was $20 a month, you can watch every game. You can actually see more than you would see on your television.
Right, but like most of your major network shows, they're only available on the Internet for just a short amount of time, aren't they?
That's right. And this is their stupidity, because I'll tell you what most cord cutters do, and it's illegal, but it's the fact. Every show is available in great high quality on the pirate networks, on the BitTorrents. Every single show. You want Game of Thrones? 5 minutes after it airs, a perfect quality version is up on the internet. And they can't stop it because they can't stop it. It's the internet. So what these companies have got to start realizing is the competition is not the other show, the other network. The competition is the high-quality pirated version that's available immediately. Most people, I believe, would buy it given the choice. And so the reason there's all this piracy going on is not because people are cheapskates or evil. If you are a Game of Thrones fan, you love that, and you will pay any price to keep that show in production. But if they don't make it available, so a number of people I know do something they call oatmealing. This comes from a cartoon called The Oatmeal, talking about this Game of Thrones issue. What they do is they'll steal it. They'll get the pirated version the minute it's available, and then they'll buy it when it's available later, and that makes them feel better. They say, well, I bought it. I just wanted it sooner.
Right, yeah. So your conscience is still clear.
Right. So in a way, that's an ethical way to do it. Probably not what H... Well, you know, it might be what HBO would prefer, because part of the reason HBO doesn't offer it right away is they don't want to make the cable companies mad. The cable companies often make deals with cable networks saying you can't put this stuff on the internet, because who's most afraid of cord cutting? Comcast, HBO loves, HBO wants to sell it to you. They would love to sell it to you directly and eliminate AT&T UVerse and eliminate Comcast and Charter and Time Warner. Those guys take some of their profits. If they sold it directly to you, they'd make more money. You'd be happier. So really, the bad guys in all this, you bet, Comcast, Charter, Roadrunner. And that's why they have the caps. That's why they have draconian requirements in their contracts with cable channels. They don't want their greatest fear is that you will do what you're planning to do. So,
okay, well,
so that's where it gets
Leo,
in trouble.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. And ABC, CBS, and NBC are really bad. You know, they have Hulu, but they don't use it, or they'll only put it there for a week. And I think it's because of others. But frankly, the world's changing, and it's changing fast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I got to tell you, DSL Extreme and most independent internet service providers do not have caps because they're not in the cable TV business. It's the cable TV players that have caps. Now, they say it's to, we got to eliminate congestion on our networks. It's not to eliminate congestion. It's to protect their business interests. Most independent internet service providers have no caps at all. Use as much as you want. There's a guy up here runs an internet service company called SonicNet. He says, use as many bits as you want. We'll make more. There's plenty of bits to go around. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Elliot is in Long Beach, California, listening to the great KFI, our mothership. Hey, Elliot.
Hey, young man. I definitely appreciate you being here every
weekend.
Well,
my pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, I have a dilemma. Is it an absolute necessity that I use Google Chrome to use Google Voice?
No.
Or can I use Firefox?
You can use any browser you want. You want to use Google Voice to make calls?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. That's an interesting question, because you do need a plug-in, don't you?
Yes, because the next part of the question was, how and where do I attach a landline to the computer? Just which, recognizing I'm in stage three of life, so I'm not these kids who can figure this stuff out.
I just
want to know.
So here's the deal. The Google Voice call system is using your internet, not a landline.
Okay.
So you don't attach a landline to it. You want to use a handset? You like using a handset, a telephone? Is that why you're asking?
Well, I have a handset, yes.
My general preference is to use a headset. This is what I use, which is headphones and a microphone on it. Instead of the telephone handset, you connect that to your computer via USB. You don't need a landline. It's using your. That's the whole point of Google Voices. It's using a landline to make the phone call. I mean, it's using the internet to make a
Okay. Well, I do have a phone that I can plug into a USB port also.
Okay. Yeah. If some people feel more comfortable. It's funny making phone calls holding a traditional handset to their ear. And if that's the case, they do make them. But it's I don't like holding anything. So it's in the long run. Once I got used to it, I far prefer even on the telephone. I use one of these Plantronics headsets. You know, it goes over your ear and has a little microphone on it, and then you can walk around and that kind of thing.
In fact, I'm using a headset at the moment.
Well, there you go.
I just had this other phone sitting here adjacent to the computer. Then I have another landline, so I know I should just attach it somehow, some way, to a USB port.
Yeah, it's got to have a USB. And then you go to gmail.com, and if you've installed the Google plugin, you should be able to call phone. I'm doing it on Safari right now, which is not Chrome. So, I think it works on any browser, including Firefox, just fine.
Okay, all right. That'll do it. And another thing I want to say that's not relevant to the question. I've been using DSL Extreme for a number of years, and when on a scale of 1 to 10, I have to give them about a 10.
Thereabouts. Maybe sometimes a 9.9 or 10.1. Elliot, thank you. They are great people. I appreciate that. Those kind words.
That's it, young man. You can go on to the next call.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, Elliot. Take care. Have a great day. Happy Easter to you, or happy Passover. Jay in Victoria, Canada, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Leo. I'm Unity Blue on the chat room, and I'm just posting a Mirasol display link for you.
What is Mirasol?
Well, that's the new display that Qualcomm came up with for the Kyobo e-readers that they sell over in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might have actually got a chance to play with a couple either at CES or something last year. But
are these flexible? What do they look like?
They're basically instead of being backlit, they use ambient light. I mean, they can have some other.
Oh, but they're color
as well.
But they're color.
Full color, full motion.
So it's kind of color e-ink, faster e-ink.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm basically mildly obsessed with tech and efficiency, and actually your show has been great in helping me with that. I'm also a cord cutter, so
great.
Definitely obsessed with your shows. But, I looked at the new iPads, the iPad 2 and the iPad 3. I actually found out that the iPad 3 uses about twice as much energy.
Oh, yeah.
It actually uses about 5 watts compared to 2.
Right.
And change. So
they almost doubled the battery in the iPad 3. That's why they did it. Yep.
Yeah, that kind of rubs me the wrong way. You'd think that they'd actually be advancing things in the efficiency realm rather than just adding a bigger battery pack.
Well, I wish we could. You know, this is one kind of struggle, Jay, that we're having, which is the batteries are not getting anywhere near better fast enough. You know? And increasing efficiency on a screen when you quadruple the pixels, in some ways, maybe they did. They only doubled the power use with 4 times the number of pixels. Maybe they did.
Maybe they did, yeah. So this particular thing with the Kyobo really interests me. Well, even back to e-ink, you know, that charge lasts on your e-reader for maybe a month. With these devices, you'd probably expect at least a week on a charge. And I'm trying to figure out, and hopefully that you and maybe the chat room, maybe your other guests like Dvorak and co, can give the inside track and help find out why these are not coming to North America, why these aren't coming to the Google and the Apple displays.
I will look into it. I have no idea, Jay. This is you're right. I did see these at CES, and I'm going to have to investigate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, there aren't a whole lot of Passover songs. I think Kyle found one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy Passover, Easter tomorrow. And look who bounced in, our very own Easter Bunny himself, Mr. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for over 40 years. And the Gizwiz, he's our kind of our gadget guy. Hey, Dick.
Yeah, I am. How are you?
I am great. Happy I guess you will. Do you get a visit from the Easter Bunny tomorrow at the Disneyland?
Oh, I do. I absolutely do. I got the empty basket, and I expect him to fill it with eggs.
You know,
and I thought we'd lay an egg here now, and people can color
just
it.
A word of warning to the Easter Bunny: do not hide eggs at Dick's place because, well, frankly, he'll never find them.
No. No, but the good thing is I find them, and find them. Yeah, they're from the 40s and 50s.
All right, so lay an egg on us, man. What is your gadget?
Last week I was going to talk about Gas Buddy, and then I found out the Mad Magazine app was being released for April Fool's.
By the way, nice job on that. That's a great app.
Oh, good, yeah, good. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people are going to be driving today and mainly tomorrow. So when I was doing a spot for ABC, the producer said, find out if there's an app to save money on gas. And I don't have a car, so I started asking cab drivers and a couple of chauffeurs.
They would know, yeah.
They would know, and they said there are lots of them, but the one everybody most mentioned was Gas Buddy. So I checked out Gas Buddy. Some neat things about it. It's for Apple. It's for Android. It's free. It's ad-driven, but the ads are tiny, maybe a half inch high, either at the top or the bottom. And what you do is you put in your zip code or tell the GPS to tell it where you are or put in an address that you're at. And then hit find gas and what kind of gas you use, regular, medium, or high test. And it'll bring all the stations up near where you are, listed with the prices. You tell it if you want most expensive. I mean, probably cheapest at the top.
Wow, gas is expensive here in Petaluma.
Oh, you know what?
$4.21.
Yeah. Well, New York City, it's around $4.69.
Wow.
I know. And the only bad thing about it from two drivers was that when it tells you how far away you are, if you see cheap gas, it really is doing it sort of as the crow flies. For example, in New York City, you'll see gas for $4.65, 90 cents cheaper in New Jersey, which it says is 1.5 miles away, which is good if you could drive across the Hudson. Okay. But you can put these stations on a map, and then you'll have a better idea of how far away you are from the cheapest gas.
I'm looking at Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where gas
what is it up there?
$117 a gallon. That's just terrible. No, I think that must be per liter. What is that? I don't understand. It says 117. I don't speak Canadian, I guess. I don't get it. But that's interesting.
I think that's a tablespoon.
It's 117 cents per liter.
Per liter.
That's confusing.
And don't they use imperial gallons, which I think is a little more than a U.S. gallon?
I think they all speak French. I don't know. It's something.
Oh, that's what it is. I think it's a gallon with a crown on it, which is an imperial.
Okay. Anyway, this is really cool. So you can actually, you can, in fact, look for prices in Canada as well.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
And it's the prices come from people who buy gas. You Gas Buddy, if you register the price at the station where you just bought gas, you win points. And then every week they have a drawing for, I think, a $250 cash buying card. So it's kind of fun. Hmm. GasBuddy.com.
Very neato. Thank you, Dick.
Thank you.
Has a website, GIZWIZ.BIZ, where you can, among other things, win autographed copies of Mad Magazine, if you can
and
guess.
And the new Mad picture is up there for the first time ever. Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we saw the one with the fatsos. This is the new one.
Oh, just click the What the Heck Is
It. Let me click What the Heck Is It. You're playing for the new May-June issue of Mad Magazine with quite a busty Statue of Liberty on the front. Yes.
This is, going with the times.
Going with the times. Yeah, even Lady Liberty has had some augmentation, apparently.
Yes, exactly.
And a parody of The Hunger Games, which I can't wait to read. That'll be fun. So how do you win that? Well, you've got to figure out what the heck that is. So it's a little, brass knuckles for Smurfs, I think. If you go to gizwiz.biz, take a look, figure it out. 12 Mad Magazines for the right answer, 24 for the wrong answer. So you do the math.
Okay.
Dickie D, thank you. Stick around. We're going to do the Weekly Daily Gizwiz, our podcast that is particularly humorless and boring. Just in a few minutes.
Good.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds, that's a very good
something
intro.
To look forward to.
I'll be here.
Thanks, Dick. We'll see you in a minute or two. Tim, Riverside, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm not too bad.
I will be here Easter Sunday, by the way, doing my show. So tune in tomorrow for the show. We're going to be here. What can I do for you?
I needed some recommendations for a good 3 or 4-in-1 printer, fax, and scanner.
I'll just tell you very simply, and I have to say they are an advertiser. You might have even heard the ads. The Epson Workforce printers are fantastic. Very affordable, very capable. One of the things I like about them, they have big paper bins, so you don't have to change the paper very often. They have, you know, if you don't want to get kind of an office, a business one, the Epson Artisan is also excellent. I've used that at home for Xeroxing, kind of in effect, color copying. I guess we can't call it Xeroxing. Color copying, faxing, scanning, all of that stuff. Really good. I love the Workforces, though. One of the advantages of the Workforces and the Epson, too, is they can be used wirelessly over a Wi-Fi network. So you don't have to hook them up to an individual computer. You just hook them up, you know, to the network via Wi-Fi. And every computer in the house can see them. That's why I loved them. Do you want?
Excellent. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, Epson's a great company, printer-wise. I think they're the best. And, again, disclaimer, they're an advertiser. But, frankly, I've been using them for years, long before they advertised, and recommending them, too. Judy, San Diego, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Leo. I have a short question here for you.
Good, because I only have a minute left.
I know. I get an error message on my computer. It just started about 2 weeks ago, and it's not consistent. It comes up frequently, off and on. And it says unknown switch, single quote, dash, dash, auto, single quote. Then I can get rid of it by hitting the X or the OK. But I don't know what this is or even how to get rid of it.
I've never seen that error message. That's an odd error message. Are you on an HP?
No, I'm on a Dell. But the thing is, I went on to look at Microsoft's, you know, questions and answers, and then several people said it was happening new to them, but there were no responses. So I didn't know what, you know, if you'd been getting this same. It just happened, started a couple of weeks ago. I have the automatic updates.
Does it come up boot up, or does it come just at random times?
Just at random at any time, and several, you know, off and on several times when I'm on the screen.
I know what the error message is, which is it's trying to launch a program with a switch that it doesn't recognize, but I don't know where it's coming from. Let me do some research. We're out of time. If I can find something, I'll put it in the show notes for you at techguylabs.com.